Have any of you paid attention to the recent nonfiction bestsellers list? There were two books that caught my eye from the Wall Street Journal list from last week. The first one is number two on the list. The title is Soul Wisdom, Practical Soul Treasures to Transform Your Life. The second one that caught my interest was number three on the list. The title, The Secret. This book was in the number one position the prior week. It was originally published as a DVD movie of the same name. And it was apparently featured on one of the Oprah shows a little while back. Anyway, the description of soul wisdom is, this is quoting from a description found on Amazon.com, this title is a practical guide to some of the simplest yet most profound spiritual development exercises that Dr. Shah teaches on national television and in his teleclasses, workshops, and appearances. It presents Dr. Shah's instructions on how to allow the inner essence of our soul to express through our bodies, our voices, and in our communication with others, not only with our fellow human beings, but also with other souls, including our own soul. This deep soul wisdom can be used for healing, for raising one's physical energy level, to promote emotional and spiritual well-being, and literally to transform any aspect of life. The power of the soul is vast and untapped. Dr. Shah reveals many ancient secrets for accessing this power, while at the same time updating it for our modern world. And then here's the description for The Secret. Fragments of a great secret have been found in oral traditions, in literature, in religions, and philosophies throughout the centuries. For the first time, all the pieces of the secret come together in an incredible revelation that will be life-transforming for all who experience it. In this book, you'll learn how to use the secret in every aspect of your life. Money, health, relationships, happiness, and in every interaction you have in the world. You'll begin to understand the hidden, untapped power that's within you, and this revelation can bring joy to every aspect of your life. The secret contains wisdom from modern-day teachers, men and women who have used it to achieve health, wealth, and happiness. By applying the knowledge of the secret, they bring to light compelling stories of eradicating disease, acquiring massive wealth, overcoming obstacles, and achieving what many would regard as impossible. And here's the comment from the publisher of The Secret. The Secret is truly the most outstanding book of date that we have published. I am so pleased that Rhonda Byrne was able to bring together this life-changing information so masterfully. She first did it for the movie of the same name that she produced, which has been a phenomenon in its own right. She then added, in only 1 month's time, incredible additional content to the transcript of the film that brings even more clarity to the reader. This is absolutely a book that people from all walks of life can read and then get the concept of the secret. It allows them to then take it and apply it to their lives. Children, teenagers, and adults of all ages are reporting miraculous stories of positive changes as a result. Rhonda Byrne is dedicated to maintaining the integrity of the secret and to making sure that now, finally, the whole world knows about the secret. You will want to share this with your friends and family, and they will be grateful for it. This book gives hope for what many have been waiting for, a shift in the way the world thinks. It's a very exciting time that we are living in, and I, as well as everyone at Beyond Words and Atria Books, are grateful to be a part of it. From the popularity of books and information such as these, I draw a conclusion that many people are indeed searching for security and meaning for themselves. And I also draw a conclusion that traditional sources for wisdom and answer in regards to metaphysical questions, you know, the questions of who am I, what's my purpose, where did I come from, where am I going, those sorts of questions. Traditional sources have been inadequate for many. Now, these include religion, including Christianity. And what I see happening is that many people are being attracted to what is, in reality, a new sort of religion. A religion that teaches that anyone can harness the energy present in the universe to create the present and future that a person can imagine. Since I haven't actually read the book nor watched the movie, I'm not in a position to accurately critique The Secret. But from what I've read of people familiar with it, describing its teachings, it takes principles that are indeed true, but gives each one a twist. Now here are a few paragraphs taken from the Oprah website regarding The Secret. The principle explains that we create our own circumstances by the choices we make in life. It seems reasonable enough. The choices we make are fueled by our thoughts, which mean our thoughts are the most powerful things we have here on earth. Or you can start living The Secret today by following three simple steps. Ask, believe, receive. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? A little bit. Or Michael says The Secret involves the law of the universe, and they in turn describe the nature of how God works. Now, referring to the Bible, he refers to the Bible. Jesus said, pray, believing that ye have that ye may receive. That's The Secret in a nutshell, he says. Pray, believing and feeling and sensing that you already have it, and then you're available to receive it. Reminds me a little of, maybe Jesus in the wilderness and the devil coming to tempt him with scripture. Well, taking a little out of context, just a little bit. Michael says The Secret isn't about contradicting religion. It supports it. It actually goes underneath the culture and explains to you the sacred laws that these wonderful teachers have brought to us, he says. According to James, The Secret is about supporting the great spiritual traditions in a more modern form. It really is just putting Christianity, Judaism, and all the great teachings into a current vernacular, he says. James says that while he honors Maureen's Christian belief system, he suggests looking at the concepts of heaven, hell, and judgment in a different way. Jesus the Christ said the kingdom of heaven is within. He didn't say it was out there somewhere. He said within. And so is it possible to consider the kingdom of hell is within as well? He says. The kingdom of God is actually in us, and what comes out of your mouth, what you think about, how you express, you're either participating in the realm of ever-expanding good or you're cutting yourself off from the realm, Michael says. Familiar thoughts, familiar principles, but a little different. Has there ever been a time when people haven't wondered about the future? Has there ever been a time when people didn't want to be more certain and sure of what was ahead? Today, many of us wonder about where this world is headed. Is there really such a thing as global warming? And if so, what does it mean for the future? What about terrorists? Are they going to affect me? What about the erosion of civil rights in the name of security? Where is popular culture headed? Is there no respect for authority anymore? Has all sense of morality been lost? Or maybe it's more personal. Where will I live next week? Where will I find money to purchase food? How will I pay for utilities? My kids seem to be making all the wrong choices. Will they end up in a big mess down the road? Is my marriage going to hold together? Many of these popular, so-called self-help type books, movies, classes, seminars, claim to have the answer, claim to have the secret that will solve and answer all these problems, all these questions. How do we know which one is right? If you're concerned about the future, your future, I believe there's a story in the Bible that can help us towards an answer. This story is found in Daniel chapter 2. For Adventists, it's probably a familiar one. Now, it's the one where King Nebuchadnezzar dreams a dream. And then he calls in his advisors, telling the dream and the interpretation. They aren't able to do it, so the king orders their execution. Daniel hears about it, intercedes, asks God for an answer, and gets it. Daniel returns to the king to tell the king about the dream and the huge idol of multiple materials. And then Daniel proceeds to give the interpretation of the dream. King Nebuchadnezzar is so impressed that he worships Daniel, and then promotes Daniel, and at Daniel's request, his three friends also are promoted. And historically and traditionally, the dream and the interpretation have been centerpieces of Adventist evangelism. While I agree that they are an important element of the chapter and the entire book, in my studies recently, I've come to believe that they aren't necessarily the most important elements of this chapter. Daniel chapter 2 is, I'm just going to go briefly through the structure of the chapter. Verse 1 is the introduction and setting. From verses 2 through 10, what we have are essentially three rounds of the king requesting his advisors to tell him the dream, and then the interpretation, and the wise men saying they can't do it. At the end, on the end of the third round, the wise men acknowledge that, you know, this request of the king is impossible to fulfill, that only the gods can do it, and that they don't know of any god that lives among men. Verses 12 and 13, the wise men's lives are threatened through the king's decree that they be executed. Verses 14 through 16 describe Daniel's response to this threat in his first audience before King Nebuchadnezzar. Verses 17 through 23 is where Daniel prays to God, receives an answer, and then worships in praise to God. Verses 24 to 25 complement verses 14 to 16. 24 to 25 is Daniel's second audience before Nebuchadnezzar. And it also complements verses 12 and 13. It's where the wise men's lives are spared, where before they were threatened. In verses 26 through 30, Daniel affirms that only the God of heaven can reveal mysteries, and that God reveals mysteries for his own purposes. It's a counter to the acknowledgement by the wise men that only the gods are able to reveal mysteries. Daniel tells the king that there actually is a God who speaks to men. Verses 31 through 47 is where Daniel then proceeds to tell the king of his dream and the interpretation. Here Daniel is giving the actual details of how God is able to reveal mysteries. Whereas at the beginning of this chapter, and we have the wise men saying, no, we can't do it. Well, that's true. No man can reveal mysteries. But now, at the end of this chapter, we see that God is able to reveal mysteries, and that he works through a man, Daniel, to reveal mysteries. Verses 48 and 49, the last two verses of this chapter, describe the new setting that will then go into the next chapter. The new setting where Daniel and his companions are honored and promoted. What's also interesting is that right at the beginning, right around, there is a verse 4. You know, although it, O King, live forever is a traditional phrase of respect, we can look at it as sort of a worship. Now, the first half of the book, of the chapter, paints King Nebuchadnezzar as a type of a god. If you listen to some of the words he uses, you know, my word is sure and certain, or certain and sure, that his decree stands firm. We see that reflected down in the second half of this chapter, where these same phrases and terms are attributed to the God of heaven. So in a sense, I believe that the way Daniel structured this chapter, he paints the wise men as kind of worshiping Nebuchadnezzar as a god. But ironically, Nebuchadnezzar is mystified and confounded and troubled by this dream and has to call on help. Help in order to interpret this dream. The center of the chapter is where Daniel, through prayer and through praise, worships God. He seeks God. His thoughts are upon God, and through God, answers are revealed to him. And then at the very end, you know, I find it interesting that King Nebuchadnezzar is essentially worshiping Daniel because Daniel was able to solve his problem. So we have in this chapter three instances, three examples of worship, of which one, the one right in the middle, is the true form of worship. Now, that's the theme and climax, verses 17 through 23, where Daniel and his friends ask God to reveal the king's mystery to them, where God answers, and then Daniel responds in worship. So I believe, in my studies anyway, that the primary theme of Daniel chapter 2 is one of worship. The God of heaven deserves and can demand worship because he is the revealer of mysteries. King Nebuchadnezzar first sought help for his troubled mind from men, his advisors. Three times they told the king that they could not do what the king demanded. In their final response, as I mentioned, they admitted that only the gods could reveal mysteries and that as far as they knew, the gods did not live among men. And so after the king had basically given up his attempt to find a solution to his troubles, out of the blue comes Daniel asking for a little bit more time so that he might bring the king an answer. Nebuchadnezzar grants the request. And the next day, Daniel was brought before him again with the knowledge of the mystery troubling the king. Daniel, too, is just a man. But Daniel is given the answer because of his relationship with the God of heaven, the revealer of mysteries. Now, that's another repeated phrase throughout this chapter is revealer of mysteries. The God of heaven, the revealer of mysteries. For Daniel, worship was not just an action. It was a way of life. He worshipped in prayer, and when the answer was provided, he worshipped in praise. For Daniel, worship was a natural outgrowth of placing God first and center in his life. In fact, I believe that that is a bigger and deeper definition of what worship is. What a person places at the center of his or her life becomes the object of worship. Worship is a subconscious thing. And I think that if worship has to become a conscious thing, then perhaps we need to examine our hearts and lives to see what is it that's really in the center of our hearts. When Daniel was faced with execution, how could he calmly and confidently ask the executioner to take him to the king? And how could Daniel request even more time when it was apparent from all external evidence that time had run out? How could Daniel be so confident that his God would reveal the mystery to him? I believe it's because Daniel knew the true secret to life. Daniel understood the source of confidence and security. This God of heaven, the revealer of mysteries, was like no other God. All other gods lived beyond the reach of people. But the God of heaven would come and speak with people who sought him out. Daniel must have also realized who he was meant to be. God had placed him and designed him in such a way to be the representative of heaven in Babylon's court. So, Daniel did what he could to further God's purposes in his sphere of influence. Given the amount of influence and stature that Daniel eventually received under King Nebuchadnezzar, Daniel could have imagined himself to be a deliverer of God's people, much like Moses was. He could have tried to get the king to allow the Jews to return to Jerusalem. Well, he could have tried to become the Jewish hero of his time. And maybe some of the Jews might have even suggested to Daniel that he do that from time to time. But there's no indication that those thoughts ever crossed Daniel's mind. Daniel had confidence in God's purposes for him, and he did not stray outside of it. What does all this matter for us today? How does this all matter? Like Nebuchadnezzar, we are often faced with troubles and challenges in life. We don't have the solution to our problems. So, we have to turn to help from some other source. Who and what do we turn to? Perhaps some television program? I don't watch TV. We don't have TV right now. But I hear, you know, there's Oprah, there's Dr. Phil, I don't know what else is out there, but there's TV programs offering advice. There's radio programs. Or perhaps it's the latest self-help book. Maybe it's a family member or a friend. The Bible, perhaps? In all these, there can be found truths and principles that can be applied. But how can we know which one is right and applicable to our problem? As Christians, the most important criterion should be the ultimate source of the advice. Are our advisors like the first group of advisors Nebuchadnezzar called? The vision of this group of advisors was limited because their gods were limited. When we get advice, when we seek advice, we need to make sure that we get it from those who are connected with the God of heaven, the revealer of mysteries. We need to make sure that the ultimate source of our advice comes from an unlimited source. We may not hear from God directly in regards to our problem, but we may hear from someone like Daniel, who had a close relationship with the true God. Or it may be from an author whom God has inspired to write about something similar to what you or I might be going through and offer some insight into how we could live our lives. Or our present circumstances might more closely resemble Daniel's. We might be faced with deadlines, some which might already be passed. We may be facing a very uncertain tomorrow. Our very lives may not be at stake, but some of us may be facing situations where life is difficult. What's the secret to living this life? I believe it's in our constant worship of the God of heaven. It's keeping Him in the front and center of our lives. The God of heaven, He is the revealer of mysteries. When the time is right, He will give each one of us the answer we need for that time. God could have given Daniel the dream and the interpretation before the death decree went out, but God chose to wait. because his purposes would be accomplished far more impressively and effectively at a latter time. And Daniel, from all indications, did not panic, and his confidence never wavered because his trust was in the God of heaven, who holds all things in his hands. So if our trust is in this God, if he is the center of our lives, if he is the object of our worship, then we too have all the reason to remain secure and confident about our present and our future. And like Daniel, we can offer our praise to God when our prayers are answered, when answers are provided to our problems. We can say, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, to whom belong wisdom and might. He changes times and seasons. He removes kings and sets up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwells with him. To you, O God of my fathers, I give thanks and praise, for you have given me wisdom and might, and have now made known to me what we asked of you."